Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's where are we at? I think we're at season 7, episode 1. It's a bit of a unique one, this. This is special because normally I'd say on my left I've got Jack Bennion, on my right I've got Ryan Champion. I don't have Ryan Champion, he's missing. But I'm looking, gazing across the table here at Autosport Show. I'm looking at Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. It was probably a year now since we had the first initial conversation of doing something with Absolute Rally. So it's quite nice to do this piece in person now and be here a year on, isn't it, really?
I guess it is, yeah. Sure, I've not even thought about it like that, but it is. It's a year. How's your year been at Absolute Rally, Jack?
I've not enjoyed any of it. No, I'm only joking. It's been absolutely brilliant. I've really enjoyed being on, and it's great to come and chat with like-minded people about rallying and just get your thoughts out there and kind of debate and throw things back into and have arguments and jokes and just a bit of fun about everything. And it's a really nice way of sort of relaxing and really enjoying rallying as a sport, really.
I think so. Well, off the back of that, of course, you've even sat alongside the boy wonder himself. You even did a rally with Ryan Champion in our holiday period. How was that?
It was interesting, to say the least. I definitely won't forget it, that's for sure. Ryan's absolutely mental in the car, and he's pretty flat out, and it was an incredible event. Lots of things went wrong, but Ryan did a fantastic job, and not to blow smoke at him, I feel like I can because he's not here. It feels okay to do it, but he's going to listen to the podcast, so it's the same thing. So yeah, sorry, but Ryan was pretty spectacular. It was only one little lock up into a square left, but he worked out that it was happening, handbrake, and by the time the slide had finished, we were aiming at the exit of the corner, and he just let the handbrake off, and bang, we were gone. We lost 3 or 4 seconds. It was like Mark Higgins when he did that jump over Ulster, and he was banging down the gears in midair and spun the thing around and lost 5 or 6 seconds when he should have lost 15 or 20. So yeah, there's a couple of very interesting moments for sure.
Oh dear, we have blown smoke up Ryan Champion's backside now, but he's not here, as we say. So anyway, listen, we're both at Autosport Show. Ryan's away playing on snow and ice at the moment. He will be along a little bit later on the podcast. Autosport Show, how has it been for you? Is it because everyone always asks the same question when you do autosport, is it the same? It is the same, and we still see the same people, but there's still some exciting things. Yeah, we're speaking now on the Friday. Yesterday M Sport had Ogier's car on the stand, and I don't remember seeing so many people around the rally car as what I've seen there.
That's right. Well, the car we've seen at the show is the car that will start Monty. It'll be the car that goes off the start line. So it's really, you know, I was speaking to Andrew Ely at M Sport, and he can't remember the last time M Sport had a car that was actually going to Monty at the show, because obviously they've been at the show for a long time, M Sport, and usually come every year. But the last time, you know, an actual car that was going to the event was here was quite a long time ago. It's usually like some sort of show car, or you know, like a test car or something like that. So that was I thought that was really interesting. And they've made some changes to the livery as well. So it's silver at the front instead of white, and the blue's matte instead of gloss and stuff like that. So interesting to see the car in person and have a good look at it. But I think the highlight of me so far was seeing Elvin announced yesterday, and it was the first announcement at 9 o'clock yesterday, and there was literally no one there. It was me, Glenn Patterson, David Evans, and somebody else. There's 3 or 4 people there maybe, and I felt a bit bad in a way. But I mean, it's a year long watching Elvin in the British Championship and seeing him perform and being there to watch that, and then seeing the fruition of that, which is him going back to the WRC, was quite a nice thing personally to see that happening and for that to happen. But there's loads of interesting stuff here as always. You know, the Autosports show is always good every year, and you know, I think there's plenty going on at the BRC stand and the World's Rally GB stand, and there's loads of other rally stands around as well. The Scottish Rally Championship got loads of really cool announcements this weekend as well, so that's good to see. You know, it's great to see the national championships here represented as well.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Obviously, we've seen Elvin kind of progress. He's come back. He came back. He took a step back to go forward, and definitely he has gone forward. The British Rally Championship, where are we at with that at the moment? Obviously, we're kind of probably 72 hours, I think, maybe a little bit more now, after the announcements of the opening round unfortunately being cancelled. Very quickly that round was replaced, but frustratingly for both the championship and competitors, and I guess fans as well, it does create that air of uncertainty which nobody wants.
Yeah, it always does. Any round of any championship being cancelled always throws up doubt, doesn't it? It always makes you question the championship, and is everything okay? Is everything going okay? You know, are the rules right, and is everything, all the regulations right, and all that kind of stuff? I think the Board of Counties did a fantastic job to step up to the plate really and take it on, because that's not an easy thing to do. And you know, to my understanding, it was like less than 48 hours was the turnaround between Mid Wales being cancelled and Board of Counties A accepting to be part of the British Rally Championship, and B state an intent to put extra stages on and try and provide a bit of a test for some of the competitors, because obviously the Border Counties is a 45 mile national event normally, so it's not the kind of the rough sort of 60 to 80 mile gravel event that you might want to see in the British Rally Championship. So they've worked really hard to add extra stages, and their night stages in Kielder as well on the Friday night, which is that should be pretty cool. That's like the Pirelli a few years ago. So brilliant for them for coming on board. Where's the BRC at? I think we'll know a lot more coming in the coming days, because the registration's only opened yesterday. So like we had last year, we've got the situation where you have a lot of people saying, yeah, I might do this, I might do that, I'm thinking about doing this, I might do a full season, I might do this event, I might do that event, you don't know. So I think over the next couple of days we'll get a real good idea of where the registrations are at. And I think a lot of people will feel a lot better when they see those registrations, because talk at the minute is quite quiet compared to last year. I think there's an element of the fact that the championship came back last year for after a year off, there was a lot of interest, and that sparked a lot of the entries and people getting excited about the British Rally Championship. This year they've got to follow that up without that sort of interest, because obviously people are still interested in the British Rally Championship, but you've not got that, oh, it's back, what's it going to look like, can we be part of it, and all that kind of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how many entries they can pull out, especially in the classes, because they weren't particularly well populated last year, and that's an area that they've got to improve on if they want to help events, because events need the entries to pay for the events. And if the British Rally Championship can't provide 100 entries, then the events have to rely on different championships to come in and fill the spots. So that's quite an issue.
I think probably what my concern is, as you've just said, last year it was the Emperor's New Clothes, everything else. There was a lot of dare I say older drivers, and I include myself in this, I suppose, who went, yeah, come on, let's go and do it. And I think, I spoke to one or two yesterday, it would be unfair of me to name them, and they weren't saying anything negative, but they had an appreciation once again of the amount of time that you need to commit to do the British Rally Championship, and they just can't do it. So there's a scattering of drivers that definitely won't be there this year, that perhaps initially last year did sign up for it, and already we've lost three or four from last year, and are we going to be able to, is there realistically three or four other people with an R5 budget that can come in and replace them?
Yeah, it's an issue, like you say, and the only kind of answer to that is with the registrations, isn't it, and actually getting to the start line in Border Counties and seeing who's there. I think it might, having the Border Counties might encourage a couple more Scottish crews to come out, but at the same time I think a few of the Welsh guys have been a bit upset that Mid Wales has gone, because they're home stages for those guys and stages that they compete on in different rallies, not just Mid Wales. So it's an area they know and a place that they enjoy. So there's definitely positive and negatives to that, and I think looking at it, the R5s are definitely going to be less populated than they were last year. But I think from what I know at the minute, it's going to be between 7 and 15 R5s, which is, to start the year anyway.
Well, fingers crossed. Obviously, the juniors have had a big announcement as well. Now, the juniors really, really propped up last year, obviously, with the DMAC Drive situation, obviously, with assistance to move forward to do either the DMAC Drive Trophy or World Championship level, which is now being absorbed into JWRC. Now, M Sport have won that championship. Slightly different idea this year for the junior section. There's a prize fund of £30,000. I'm not entirely sure whether that's hard cash or whether that's assistance. It's hard cash. Okay. The open tyre format has come back. When we say open tyre format, that is tyre manufacturers that have registered
and to be part homologated FIA tyres.
Yeah, and have FIA homologated tyres, which was a route that unfortunately was a bit of an unravelling for me last year, but that's a different conversation for a different day. But tyre manufacturers, they've got FIA homologated tyres that have signed up to the championship. So realistically, what we're looking at Michelin versus Pirelli versus DMAC. That's really what we're looking for in the juniors, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're looking for. Like you say, the prize has changed. It's £30,000 in cash. I thought the prize last year was fantastic. A chance to go and drive in the DMAC championship is, last year it probably was the best junior championship in the world for R2 drivers. But there was two kind of issues for the BRC in that. The first one was, my biggie is promoting British drivers through championships. I think it's really important that they make that step up from different championships, and that prize took away theoretically the best junior driver in the country and sent them abroad. So the steps I'd like to see is, back when people like Ryan Champion and Mark Higgins were doing the British Rally Championship, and they did one class and then they'd step up to the next class, and the prizes would be staggered like that. So I quite like the new format, in the sense that instead of being forced into going to do the DMAC trophy and raising the extra cash that comes with that as well, because it was a subsidised entry, it wasn't like a full entry, go and drive, there's everything paid for. Rob Duggan at the minute is trying really hard to put together his programme for the championship next year, and he's having to raise quite a bit of money to add to what he's been given by DMAC. The prize was still massive, but he's still having to subsidise that himself by adding money to that. With this prize, it gives the driver the chance to put the money wherever they want. You know, if it's a British driver who wins it, he's got that chance to put the money towards driving an R5 car next year if he wants to, or stepping up to the, you know, to a Group N car or something like that. So it gives the drivers a bit more freedom, I think. And I think, you know, only time will tell in terms of the entries how good it's going to be. But yeah, I think on first thoughts, I think there's a lot of positives in the new prize. And you know, there is the negative that we're not sending someone to the Drive DMAT Trophy. Will that affect international entries coming over? I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. You know, I think they'll still come and compete for the stages and for the competition that we're going to have in the British Championship. It's always been the best place to go for a junior.
Absolutely. Now we're getting massively bogged down, as we normally do with BRC, but we've got Andrew Wheatley coming up a little bit later on the podcast, who Ryan and I, and I think even yourself, we've been speaking about the R2 National car, obviously, as a go-between the R2 cars, which we all agree have become very, very expensive now. But he made reference to the fact that M Sport are probably about a month behind where they wanted to be because some French bloke rang them. Now, we speculated and we talked about it, of course, the end of last year. We've just made reference to the fact that the car was on the stand, obviously, as well. But it's really, really... Monte Carlo is pretty much upon us, and we've got lots of new shapes, we've got lots of new drivers in different cars and stuff like that. Do you still get giddy for Monte Carlo?
I've not been as giddy. Well, I wasn't that giddy last year. When Loeb came back, that was a big thing for me. I'm a massive Loeb fan.
And, you know, I went to that one, yeah.
Growing up watching, you know, Seb's kind of my kind of, I wouldn't say growing up period, but he is kind of someone who I've grown up watching. So, you know, I know it'll probably make a few people feel old saying that, but
me,
yeah, basically. But he was fantastic to watch, and you know, a real like benefit for the sport. So him coming back in 2015 was really cool. Last year I was a little bit less excited. You know, it was good to see Chris challenging Seb, but the Rock took him out of it. So that battle was gone by Saturday afternoon, and then it was another cruise to victory for Seb on Sunday. So in answer to your question, yes, I still get giddy about Monte Carlo. I'm especially giddy this year because we've got all the new cars. It's just uncertainty. That's what makes any championship, that's what makes any championship exciting. We've got no idea. You know, I think far too many people have written off Thierry Neuville and Hyundai very, very quickly. Chris will be there or thereabouts, we know. If he can stay consistent throughout the year and put a real championship charge together, which we've not seen from Chris before in the World Rally Championship, so I'm still not convinced he's, you know, the all-out favourite. Seb's there. We don't know how good the Fiesta's going to be against the other cars, but from the same point of view, we don't know how good the Hyundai and the Citroen are going to be. You know, the Ford could rock up and be the best car by a mile. It could rock up and be the worst car by a mile. We've got no idea, and that's what makes it so exciting for me.
Shall we put it on your toes now? Tip for Rally Monte Carlo winner.
I'm going to go Thierry Neuville. I think Thierry Neuville will win in Monte Carlo, and I think he'll win the championship this year. I think Hyundai are going to have the strongest package. I know that's putting a lot out there early on. Yeah, it's going to be. That's.
I was going to build the championship win. You've gone straight to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Two footed.
Well, you know, you've got to be all out there, haven't you? You've got to go balls out, haven't you? But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. I'm sure throughout the year, as the manufacturers get used to the cars and are changing things and testing, and you know, Citroen are bringing another car and you know all that kind of stuff. The other thing probably to think about is, you know, I've not heard it talked about much, but you know, with the three cars working for each manufacturer here this year. Sorry, Tony's just answering his phone here. You know, it's far too important for Absolute Rally.
I was turning the ringer off. I wasn't aware. I apologise. But there's nothing worse than having a phone ringing throughout a podcast. It's happened once or twice before. But go on, sorry, Jack.
No, that's fine. No, so I think the thing that people maybe haven't thought of with the manufacturers moving to three cars is the development factor, because you know we're gonna go through a year of having brand new cars, new aero. They've all been built from the ground up, absolutely brand new. So having the three cars as opposed to Citroen's two, that gives M Sport and Hyundai the chance to have three cars on the event, data from three drivers, and they're going to be able to develop the car. Theoretically, they're going to have more information to develop their cars with. So are Citroen going to be pulled back by that as we get to the halfway point of the year? They're going to develop slower. Maybe they'll put more money in. You know, this is what I'm saying. That, you know, the uncertainty is so exciting about the championship this year.
I would say though, out of all the manufacturers, if you put Volkswagen to one side now, because we can't really include Volkswagen. We know Volkswagen were testing the 2017 car for, it felt like forever. Let's be honest. Citroen must have been probably the second most kind of developed car. I think the amount of clicks they must have put in testing, because last year was all about testing for them. Whereas I think probably, in order of testing, it probably kind of went Volkswagen, Citroen, Hyundai, Toyota, Ford. I'd hasten to say, and I'm sure someone will put us straight on that, but that's the way I see it. So I think Citroen will be probably the strongest package. I'm going to go out there now. I'm going to say Citroen will be the strongest package.
Going off what you've said there about the development of the cars that were competing last year, that's what impressed me so much about Hyundai, was the fact that, you know, they rocked up with a brand new car last year against a developed Polo that had been winning championship 3 years, a Citroen that had been around since 2011, 2012 with Loeb, the Fiesta same time, developed by Hirvonen and Gronholm and people like that. So it's one of those things with the Hyundai, you know, they rocked up with a brand new car, and between Argentina and GB, Nerva was the champion last year. If you just took those events into account, so to come up with a new car and be that competitive against the Polo that had been so dominant for 3 years, to me strikes, you know, it looks good for this year for them, having turned up with such a competitive car last year against well developed cars. It's going to be much stronger for them next year if they can do the same thing and mirror what they've done this year, I think.
Absolutely right. Before we go any deeper into this, because we need Ryan Champion, it's odd just for you and me talking about stuff. We almost need that Yorkshire little twang in the background.
He'll find a way to pick some holes in what we're saying, won't he?
Absolutely. So listen, what we're going to do, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to be listening and talking to Andrew Wheatley with regards to the RC National car, and about that phone call that he got from, or he, not he got, but Welcome got from Sebastian Ogier, which has kind of changed things a little bit at M Sport over the last couple of months, to say the least. And then all of us will be back to talk about Monte Carlo, about some of the headlines, and we might even have a special guest at the end of the podcast as well. But sit back, relax, enjoy what Andrew Wheatley's got to say, and we'll catch you up with you at the end of the podcast.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally. We're stood now by the fantastic M Sports stand with Andrew Wheatley. Andrew, I've mentioned numerous times, known him for a long time, very passionate about one make championships and the R2 National car, which has kind of prompted mine and Ryan's discussion a few weeks ago about where it kind of fits and everything else. I thought, well, we'll just ask the man who's been involved with the project. So Andrew Wheatley, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on.
We're fascinated by the R2 National car. Ryan and I both have done one makes over the years, and we felt maybe the R2 was now starting to become a tad out of reach of your average person, and then this National car came about, and we were like, okay, we can see this. Is this where M Sport kind of see it going?
Yeah, I think it's you've got to look back at the history of where we are with one make championships. When we designed the Fiesta ST, which you know very well, that was never intended to be a class competitive car. It was, at the time, Hondas were competing, Renaults were competing, they both had more power, they had a little bit less weight. When we developed the ST, it was going to be always with one make championship in mind. Then when we came to do the new R2, we had to make a decision. Do we try and push to be the best R2 in the class, or do we try to continue the same basis of making affordable performance? The decision with the 1600 was affordable performance. Now, that was great until Peugeot and in particular Opel came along and just pushed the envelope further and further and further and further. And our customers in R2 were saying, well, we need to do this, this, this. We just couldn't do it. Homologation regulations didn't allow us to change the 1600 car because of the inlet manifold. That was a restriction we just couldn't change. So when the new 1 litre turbo came along, we had the opportunity to be able to do something a bit more radical and take the regulations to the limit. So Malcolm sat down with the engineering team and said, okay, clean sheet of paper, new 1 litre car, what's the best R2 car you can build? So the engineers came back with a fabulous car, and then we added up how much it's going to cost. And unfortunately, like everything, the costs went up. And when we sat down internally, we said, well, we've got to do it because we want to have the most competitive R2 car in the class. And when we're doing things like the DMAC Championship, which is now evolved into the Junior World Rally Championship, you can't turn around to those guys and say, well, you know, if we could make the car a little bit more durable or a little bit more quick, it would have been competitive with the Adam. We had to try and beat the Adam. And so the new car, the R2 Turbo that came along, is a fabulous car, but it's quite technical, it's quite complex. The ECU in the car is exactly the same as in the R5. The dash control system is the same as the R5. The transmission control system and gear cuts the same as the R5. and all that needs managing, which has taken the car away from what our philosophy was with one make championships and R2s, really. So the decision was made, what can we do to try and get the R2 car back to where we originally wanted to be with it? And looking back at the Fiesta ST, the reason why that car was so successful was because it was a bog standard engine with a nice transmission, it stopped well, and it was reliable. And so we took what we've got in the R2 and effectively down-tuned it. It's got a standard engine, it's got much simpler suspension and much, much cheaper suspension, because it's based on non-adjustable Bilsteins as opposed to three-way adjustable Raigers. And we wanted to try and create another step back on the ladder of opportunity. We've had this situation before where we just end up a little bit too complex on the situation. So the national car is designed to try and sit below the R2 and give people a chance to come out of an ST or a 1.6 R2. They want to make a step and go a bit further, jump into a national car, and then when you've got a bit more money or need that extra performance, because you know it's more complicated to drive with the more performance as well, then there's a chance to upgrade it to R2.
So that is the natural progression, and obviously you can. This is kind of a base level car. That was the original plan for the R1 car, wasn't it? Was kind of upgrade the R1 car.
It's the same philosophy that we've got now. You know, we have an ambition in M Sport that we'll be able to start off with a 1 litre R1 car, and you progress through to you've got a car that compete and can finish in the top 20 of the WRC. The concept is that you've got, once you fit the roll cage to the body shell, you can then upgrade it all the way from R1 up to the top. So we're not 100% there with that at the moment. There's still some discussions that we're having, and we're going to be having more at the show here about how we can extend that concept lower to make a really standard car to start off with. But at the moment, the National is a good compromise. It stops well, it drives well, it's easy to maintain, it's a little bit cheaper than the R2, and it gives you that opportunity to get that experience.
So moving forward, obviously, as I say, we always say to this, our listeners, because Ryan and I bang on about when we did one makes and stuff like that, people interested in this, what's the best way of kind of expressing some kind of way of getting into it, I guess?
Well, the thing with one makes is, and it's typical, the best example I can give you is a little project we've got underway at the moment in Ireland. We were approached by the organisers of the Irish Rally Championship, and they've got a fantastic award in the south of Ireland for the Billy Coleman Award. And every year they're trying to work out who's the best recipients of that. And in Ireland there's a great championship, the Junior Championship, which is 1.6 modified cars competing on rounds of the Irish Championship, which you all know is a fantastic championship. Problem is, at the moment it's being dominated by Honda Civics. Fantastic pieces of engineering being put together in Ireland, but nobody knows which is the fastest car and which is the fastest driver, because you've got people putting a huge amount of resources into a 15-20 year old Civic, and maybe not, we don't know where it is. So what they said to us was, can we make a one make championship in Ireland that could create this concept of one make again? We said the national car is perfect. In France, we've just done a project with the FFSA to create the French Junior Rally Championship. It looks like there's going to be 16 or 18 cars starting the first round of that in April, which is brilliant. We want to do a project in Ireland to try and get 5 or 6 cars competing in Ireland. And we're now looking for feedback as to whether we do something similar in the UK. And, you know, and that's something we'd appeal to you guys to come back and tell us, you know, where do we want to be? We have an idea, but you know, what's the best route forward?
Okay. So if people can get in touch with us, and then we perhaps pass on their comments to you, yeah, and I mean, try and make it work.
From the perspective of where we are, we're sitting down with Ian Campbell. You know, we believe that there's a great amount of work being done in BTRDA Championship with the ST Trophy, which I know Jack and yourself have both driven those cars. And that's doing a great job in BTRDA Championship, you know, 10, 12, 14 cars competing all rounds. That's fabulous. You know, for a one mate championship, it's brilliant. And then there's the British Junior Championship, which has got drivers like Rob Duggan doing a fantastic job, and Marion and Adam and drivers like that doing a great job. But the gap between BTRDA and British Junior Championship at the moment, we believe, is just a little bit too big. And what we would like to do is see if there's an opportunity to bring a halfway house in there, something that's utilising maybe half the championship is 45 mile rallies, and then half the championship is international rallies, or not internationalized but full BRC rallies, to give people a chance to be able to progress from one to the other in the year, so that when you go the following year you can go in to do BRC Junior and it's, you know, you're running at full speed, and that's something that we are evaluating right now. So
do you think this is achievable for this year, or do you think you're going to be using this year as perhaps getting a guide to launch fully in 2018? Is it achievable this time? What time frame?
6 weeks ago, yes, it was achievable, and then we had a phone call from a Frenchman, and that kind of put everybody's schedules a bit.
I'm guessing he's not doing the junior championship.
No, he's not this year. But it's kind of put everything at M Sports kind of dropped a month whilst we got all that sorted and up and running. So I would, now the time is now. You know, Autosport Show is when people make decisions as to what they're doing. So what we want to try and do here is chat to people and see if we put this concept together, will we get 5-6 cars? I think a championship with 2 or 3 cars is difficult to sustain.
Yeah.
We need to know that we're going to get 5 or 6 cars so we can put some support behind it. And we've got the technical support on BRC rallies there already. We've got people on the events. It's just a question of whether we can create a package that puts, you know, some benefit for people to go in championship. But the next week, 10 days, is going to be crucial.
Fantastic. Listen, we'll stay in touch. If we can help, if we can push it in any way, shape or form, Ryan and I, as I say, we keep on banging on about this. We do need to find something to help these youngsters crack on, as you say, from that jump from BTRDA and juniors upwards. And yeah, we'll be rooting for you. And thanks for your time, Andrew.
No problem at all. Thanks, Nick.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. As I say, it's our first programme back now. We've done Autosport stuff at the top of the show. We even spoke to Andrew Wheatley with regards to their new R2 National car, which obviously they're trying to get some feedback behind. And as I say, if you do want to get involved with that, drop us a line. We can pass on the thoughts to Andrew anyway. But we now come to Monte Carlo, and we're going to do a wonderful preview with a former guest of the show. And this year, I think, probably going to be a bit more of a contributor. Martin Holmes, welcome back to Absolute Rally and Happy New Year.
Great to be here again, and looking forward to Monte Carlo and everything that follows.
Has there been a season, now you've been around a little bit longer than me, and I say that with the greatest of respect, of course, has there been a season that we've been this excited about ever? I'm not sure. Not in my lifetime, it feels like, anyway.
When we came to this Group B cars, they were introduced in stages. So you didn't have a situation where all these Group B cars suddenly appeared. What you got now, of course, is 2017 cars, is everybody suddenly bringing out their cars on the same event. So in that way, nothing has been quite like this before.
Before we go any deeper, last time we spoke, there were still drivers finding homes for themselves and everything else. Was there any surprises for you, Martin?
Well, the whole Volkswagen thing was extremely unfortunate, obviously. No, it took a long time before the Osberg team got announced. But otherwise, it seems sad that Andreas doesn't have a regular drive. I mean, it is really a little bit strange when Duval won Australia. He'd never drove for the team again. When Andreas won Australia, he never drove for the team again. These things are a bit weird. They don't give a pattern, but they're just weird coincidences.
That's going to be a great quiz question in a few years' time, isn't it? Two former winners of Rally Australia never to drive for the teams again.
Yeah. But I think it happened also with Michael Ericsson and Mitsubishi. I think that happened with him as well.
Wow. That would have been the Gallant, wouldn't it? Or am I just guessing there? Would that have been the Gallant? Mitsubishi Gallant? That was the precursor to the Lancer?
Yes, it's before. Yeah. Well, I mean, he then went on to Lancia and other teams like that. Now, that was... you do get some pretty weird things happening.
Absolutely. But we, as you say, aside from Andreas, which we're hoping this year he will find his way into a 2017 car, I'm sure. I must admit, you mentioned Mads Osberg at the top. I really kind of had it in my head that perhaps there was going to be a Norwegian World Rally Team. And perhaps
well, it would
those
make
two,
sense.
Yeah.
But what is interesting is the whole the whole connection between Norway and Czech Republic. Now, when you go back, 40 years ago, with John Haugland, he was the top Norwegian rally driver, almost the only one actually. But and he teamed up with Czechoslovakia in those days. It's funny to see that the world has come around again to that this liaison with Mats and with Martin Prokop.
Yeah, Andre, do you think he will find some one-off outing somewhere? Because the problem, of course, that we're all aware of is that there's only so many 2017 cars actually being built.
Yes, or a few more are being built. But then on the other hand, there are even more number of cars, drivers, who had high hopes of driving one of them and so far aren't driving them. So I don't think... Well, this season... I mean, there's always the unexpected situations happening. Somebody loses their license or falls off a mountain bike and things like that. But with that type of thing accepted, I don't think there's going to be any new opportunities for people like Andreas this year.
There was a sharp intake of breath. We were all hoping, and I guess this is a very UK-centric way of putting things, but we were all very, very hopeful that Elvin was going to get the DMAC car. Now, he has been announced for Monte Carlo. That program has been out. But, of course, there was little rumours that Andreas may have pipped Elvin to that DMAC car. I don't know whether you picked up on any of those, but I must admit, it was squeaky bum time for us kind of rooting for him. But by all accounts, Elvin has done a fair amount of testing in the 2017 car, and that has helped towards him getting this deal together.
Well, I mean, I get the impression Elvin is getting more and more mature all the time and less prone to things going wrong. And hopefully he'll come into the championship with more self-confidence than I think he had the last time he was in the World Championship team for M Sport. Every indication is that's going to happen. And so I hope he has a good year. I mean, the whole effect of the DMAC tyre is, of course, a huge curiosity. We don't know whether the successes, or the speed rather than successes, of Tanak towards the end of last year were Tanak's brilliance, or the fact they had more useful tyres than the Michelins of everybody else in the championship. I mean, all this is an unknown factor, and it'd be interesting to know what is going to happen, whether Elvin is suddenly going to find he's got the golden tyre, which is going to give him the success which he hasn't yet had in the World Championship in the past.
Now, moving on to the other two M Sport cars, it's going to be interesting. I can't remember the last time we had three separate liveries on three works entries. I'm sure you'll be able to put me straight on that. But three completely different liveries. We'll come to Tanak. We just mentioned him, of course. Tanak's running very much the M Sport development livery, if you like, which I think is promoting the development side of the M Sport business.
Well, it's the Ford Blue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It was very subtly done, but the Ford Blue. And Tanak, as you say, back on Michelin's, back, you know, in the first team squad, as it were. And as you say, it'll be interesting to see now what does happen with him also being back on Michelin's, but also now having a four-time world champion as his teammate, because many, many other drivers have been crushed in this particular situation, haven't they?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen with Ogier. He's coming for the first time for many years to a team in which he hasn't been instrumental in sorting things out from scratch, and he's suddenly going to have to accept decisions made about the car and about the way it's run that he hasn't had to suffer before. You know, he's been able to say, I think we'll do it this way, and I think we'll do it this way. Well, he's just handed the product and told to get on with it. So to what extent that's going to blunt Ogier's winning ways is what's going to be interesting to find out.
And also, as I say, I think it'll be interesting to see how he works with Tanak. Obviously, previously, you know, his other teammates. It's only really probably Andreas towards the end of last year where almost the gloves came off, I think, whereas Jari Matti definitely kind of struggled, almost in a similar vein, I suppose, to kind of that Loeb and Danny Sordo era of Citroën, where, you know, he almost that submissive number two driver. And I guess, you know, he probably won't want to be that submissive number two driver at the moment because, you know, this is his second bite of the cherry almost, isn't it?
You're talking about Latvala?
Yes.
Yes. Well, obviously, he had, like Osberg did, an ebbing away of self-confidence last year. But both of them are coming back with new self-confidence this year. I saw the pictures on the internet of Latvala's recce car yesterday, but I don't know the story behind that one. But seriously, I think that Latvala's still got a lot going for him. I mean, when you realize he's easily the most experienced driver in the World Championship, I mean, that counts for a lot.
Stage miles, absolutely. But as you say, it is just that. You know, I know he was working with a new mind coach, I think, the beginning of last year and certainly towards the end of the previous season. But as you say, definitely that ebbing away of almost accepting the inevitable that, you know, Ogier is the number one. He's going to win. He's going to be the world champion and stuff like that. I guess I said it at the end of last year on our podcast that he needed this clean sheet of paper. This is where now, realistically, this is, you know, what you say he's the most experienced driver. Yes, he is. Obviously, the number of kilometres he's done in a World Rally Car over the years, but also the age factor as well. You know, he's probably one of the older drivers now in the WRC.
Oh, yeah, he's a good few years short of Meek, of course. I mean, Meek is a grandfather almost in the sport, and be interesting to know how long Meek will keep up his personal determination. I mean, he's got a contract for 2 years. I hope he doesn't find that a way to ease things off in his own determination. Although, I mean, certainly Maton has been talking in terms of letting Meek develop into the new car rather than going out to win in it straight away. But there's nothing like a shorter contract to keep drivers on their toes.
No, absolutely. As I say, we've moved from Toyota to Citroën. If I can just take us back to Toyota there for a second, I think I would have been very interested to know whether they would have took both Sebastian Ogier and Jari Matti, if they would have had the option, because, you know, I think there was things said that when Sebastian Ogier did become available, it was pretty much an offer was on a table. You know, I think I heard some things that Tommy had pretty much flown over to Japan to see the hierarchy of Toyota to basically, for them to, you know, put their faith and blessing on a huge contract offer. Would they have took both those drivers? And where would that have left somebody like Johanan? And his poor Johanan, and again, reminds me of his time, early days with Hyundai. That obviously he was the test driver and everything else. And he's almost kind of got that number two seat by and we call it a number two seat, but almost by default.
Well, I don't know, of course. But on the other hand, I don't think Toyota would have wanted to have both. To have the arrival, unexpected arrival of one of them was disruptive enough to their driver plans as it was. I mean, they've got a whole history of drivers being trained and not being used on rallies. Now, that obviously would never have created any satisfaction amongst the people either aspiring to drive for him or actually driving for him, if you realize that people don't have, the team doesn't have the full confidence of wanting you, even though that they have said that they're training you.
Yeah, now that was quite interesting, that we're jumping around a little bit, but Timo Sunderman, of course, who has been doing a hell of a lot of test kilometres in. Now, his name didn't appear, of course, at the launch, and the reason why that happened is because he's been announced in M Sport's WRC2 team. Also, the Japanese drivers, who are still part of the Gazoo Racing training programme, obviously they're still driving. Marco Martin ran R5 cars, and I think a couple of them are going to be doing some WRC2 rounds. Do you feel that perhaps the initial ethos that Toyota came back with regards to training their drivers and bringing them up through the ranks, and also almost having a Japanese driver as well as part of their driver lineup, may have gone by the wayside?
I see the Japanese driver input into the team as a longer term thing. I don't think they were ever going to be considered seriously for a works drive at this time. I think that both of them are too young on that one. But isn't it a little bit funny, you've got Camilli and you've got Sunderman teaming up together in Ford or with M Sport, and of course these are the people that initially were being trained by Toyota.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, most definitely. Now we've gone round the teams almost. We haven't mentioned Hyundai, and perhaps the reason why we've not mentioned Hyundai is the fact that it's the most settled team, of course, out of all of them. But where do you see the strengths and weaknesses in Hyundai this year?
Well, I think they've got a very solid team. I think of all the teams in the championship, this is quite the most a team that most team managers would have been envious to have. Obviously, you never quite know whether Sordo is going to have the consistency all over the shop that he has on asphalt rallies, but when you see what Hayden is capable of doing, particularly like that final stage in Argentina, as an example, you know that he's got things to come in the future, which leads to this whole question of Thierry. And he is an enigma in many ways. I mean, he's a wonderfully accomplished driver, but you never quite know where he's coming from. You know, he made all this effort about people on his path, shall I say, encouraging the thought that he is obviously going to back to Citroën. Well, that never happened. But why did they do that? What's driving him to allow people to express discontent? Very mixed, a very strange character is Neuville. I like the guy a lot. There's nothing against him, but it seems strange.
Yeah, I think obviously the other two are, as you say, are very, very, maybe, just maybe, he's looking for a status as a number one. I don't know whether there's a clear number one status within Hyundai. I think it's definitely been shared around, and you just wonder maybe he feels he needs that, you know. I don't know. I'm only speculating, of course, on these things, but I think obviously...
No, I don't believe there's any such... I don't think there's any situation like that.
Okay. Well, as you say, I think now all that's kind of gone by the wayside and everything else. I think that realistically it was possibly only Citroën that was. I can't help but feeling, though, Martin, it was used as a leverage of some sort. And
I think you're right, yeah, to up the salary.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. You know, there was something...
No, I mean, that's an old trick.
Yeah.
One you use as often as possible by drivers when it comes to negotiation time.
So, driver lineup wise, we've touched upon, of course, on WRC2. I think WRC2 is quite interesting this year, and I think the reason why I'm finding it more interesting.
I think it's even more than last year. Yeah.
I think we've got, you know, I use the term in inverted commas, works teams now. You know, WRC2 originally, of course, was meant to be, you know, the replacement almost, of, I suppose, of PWRC from kind of, you know, 9-10 years ago, whatever it was. Of course, we had Super 2000 and everything else. It was rebranded as WRC2. Now we have works teams and Skoda Motorsport, M Sport, and we have professional drivers in it. And I find this year is going to be possibly the best year for WRC2 that we've seen for quite some time.
I think you're right, yeah. And, I mean, whether Skoda keep holding the fort, I don't quite know. Hyundai don't seem to be interested in anything more than simply making cars available for private teams. But Skoda has still got their big guns working for them.
I think both Skoda and M Sport have got a very similar, I guess, ethos as well. In Skoda, of course, you know, we did a big press release with regards to the 200th Skoda R5 that was sold to Eric Weavers Motorsport over in Holland, a fantastic team, been around for many, many years. And M Sport also, obviously, their R5 program and the way they sell cars, but also they've took it upon themselves, like Skoda Motorsport, to actually have their own team to show really what the cars can do, as opposed to people perhaps taking the cars and, dare I say, may not be able to do them justice.
Well, I mean, it started last year, not for the intention for Elvin to be trained as a champion, but simply with a view to showing other customers what is the capability of their Evolution Fiesta. And, you know, they've moved on from now by making their presence in WRC2 more official, as it were. I still find one of the confusions in WRC2 is the way that people register in order to get better starting numbers rather than to indicate their intention to take the championship seriously. Don't know quite how to overcome that, but it's still certainly a weakness in how things are being run.
I think we spoke about it, I was talking to Julian Porter about it on our programme last year, and we were talking about how, you know, you can strategically pick events, because obviously there's so many scoring events and people can kind of go and pick events that they can go and, you know, they want to do, or maybe they're stronger. Whereas maybe if they had a fixed calendar and said, right, this is your WRC2 calendar and this is where you're going to score points, that would perhaps move people away from strategic entries, as it were.
It's not so much that factor. I mean, apart from the fact that you can get two people vying for the championship who hardly ever meet against each other, I mean, that obviously is a disadvantage. I wouldn't say weakness, but it happens. But what I feel is alarming is the way that people register for the championship and they've only done one rally and only ever had the intention, and they register simply to get a better starting number on the event they're going to do.
Now
that's what I find is I don't like.
Now, it's talking of starting numbers and running orders and things like that, there has been a tweak, of course, to running orders after many, many conversations with many people and obviously many many quotes from Mr. Ogier with regards to his thoughts on it. Can you perhaps, for our listeners, explain this year how the running order is going to work?
Well, basically, the first leg of the rally is, as it has been before, is based on the champions. This is just the top priority drivers we're speaking about. It's based on the current championship standings and, of course, for Monte Carlo, the results at the end of last year. Then last year, that same order continued essentially through day two as well, and then we had the reverse seeding order for day three. Now, this year, the idea is that old system applies to day one, but then they go back to reverse seeding on days two and three. So that mainly is the difference. But the funny thing is, of course, when you've got Monte Carlo, things are never quite as simple. They're keeping the same championship order on legs one and two, and only changing it when it gets to Saturday. But that's Monte Carlo all over.
Yeah, they do their own thing. Now, yeah. Monte Carlo, I've been fortunate enough to go over. I've watched some fantastic rallying over there. Of course, you will be going over in the next not too distant future, albeit with flights and everything else. This year, how are we feeling about Monte Carlo? There's no big changes to the routes and things like that. It is pretty much as it has been for the last year or so. Is there going to be any other surprises? Have you looked at weather and things like that yet, Marty?
Well, when you see the images of the wrecking yesterday, they looked lovely. Beautiful sunshine, ice on the roads, or patches of ice and snow in the fields and everything like that. And if the rally started this minute, it's going to be a classic, I think. No great snow banks, but then that's not always a good thing, even though it's spectacular. No, I think things are going to look good at Monte Carlo. Then, of course, we further afield start hoping that Sweden will be an attractive event as well. And, moving the rally a little bit westwards is going to help a little bit there, although it's going to bring its own problems in Sweden.
Of course, last year there was the big panic that it was going to be a dry rally, which is a bizarre thing to say about Sweden, but they seriously lack snow, hence why the reasons why they've moved it. But just coming back to Monte Carlo, Martin, dare I ask the question, where do you see our runners and riders? Can you even take a punt at it? Bearing in mind what we said at the top with regards to nobody really knows where the cars are and everything else.
I think Shakedown's likely to be interesting. don't forget that Shakedown is tomorrow and not on Thursday. Don't sort of wake up and miss it all.
Yeah.
No, I really don't want to say anything because I got nothing useful to say. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be, as they say, the level playing field. And what I find interesting, we made an analysis of how much testing each of the teams have done. And from what Toyota tell me, they've done twice as much as everybody else and three times as much as people like Ford and Hyundai. With Hyundai, of course, all their testing was not based on the car, because it was a development over 3 years of everything to do with the new technique. You know, they didn't know that they thought they were going to use the coupe earlier, then they had to go back to Saloon and everything like that. So they had a lot of extra testing they had to do. But if that's the case, then M Sport obviously has probably done the least constructive testing, following Citroën and, of course, following Toyota, who seemed to have done the most.
I had a very interesting conversation with somebody from within, who had been within WRC. He was telling me that that the Toyota ethos and certainly Tommy Mäkinen's ethos towards testing is that you can test any problem out of a car, hence that's why there were so many kilometres done on the car.
Well, yes, maybe. But on the other hand, the team are all working together for the first project. So what does that mean? It means that they're not only all coming together with a like mind of experience, like experiences that they have all shared, they haven't shared that at all before. And so that obviously leads to more needs to test and more things to check out.
Well, I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. When do you depart, Martin, for the service park?
Well, I'm going to be there tomorrow. Then I'm coming back, which is my normal way, to follow the rally from home. By doing a day trip through Marseille and driving up the Gap, you can be in the service park 5 hours without any difficulty. And that, especially as on the Wednesday, that includes the cars going off to the Shakedown. Often if you go on a Wednesday, you don't see the drivers so much because they are still finishing off their wrecking. But this time in Monte Carlo, this year, the teams have been told to make their drivers more available on the Wednesday afternoons than they have been in the past. So that's my plan, and be interesting to see what the cars all look like in flesh.
Fantastic. Listen, we're going to be watching a bit like you. I guess we're not going to get the chance to go to the service park. Certainly I'm not anyway, but I can't wait to start seeing the images come through, as you say, some of the test times and obviously the shakedown times as well. So Martin Holmes, thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally, and please, if we could welcome you back, perhaps leading up towards Sweden, that would be fantastic.
Okay, well, here I am. You know how to find
Absolutely.
Me.
Martin Holmes, thank you. Have a very safe journey over to Rally Monte Carlo, and we'll be back with the final section of the programme after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and the boys are back together again. The boys are back in town. We've got Jack Bengian, of course, on my left, who is at the top of the programme. Hello, Jack Bengian.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
You've already been in this episode, it's fine, but the person who hasn't, obviously, is the other man who's always on my right-hand side, is Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, do I say Happy New Year then at this point?
No, it seems sarcastic to do it so late, doesn't it, really? But I suppose
but it's a new year and we're here for the first time, so I've got to say it.
All right, fine, all right, do Happy New Year then.
There was no sarcasm in it.
No. Do you know what? The reason why I said that, right, because I was working at the weekend, I was gigging at the weekend, and I walked on stage and I went, Happy New Year, and everyone kind of went, ugh. And I don't know if that's just me or the fact I said Happy New Year or not. That's where I came from anyway. Boys, we're 4/5 into the podcast. Do you see what I did there? Simple mathematics. And Monte Carlo is upon us. Now, Jack has already gave Rye his opinions on not only who's going to win Rally Monte Carlo, but who's also going to win the WRC this year. Now, who do you think Ryan's gone for? Who do you think Jack's gone for, Rye? Because you've not heard that bit yet.
I haven't. Oh. What, for Monte Carlo or for WRC?
Both. He put them on the table. He put his dangly bits on the table. He committed.
And has he given the same person for both, or has he given a different answer?
Same person.
Oh. Is he going to be patriotic, say Chris Meek?
No.
Oh, that's disappointing.
It is, isn't it? That's what I thought when I said it.
So you're asking me the same question, I guess, now?
I'm going to ask you, A, who did Jack say, and B, who are you going to say?
Well, so is... if Jack isn't saying Chris Meek, I'm saying he's going for an M Sport win with Sebastian Ogier.
No, he's gone for Thierry Neuville.
Wow, for both.
Yep.
Have you put some money on Jack?
I haven't, but I'm thinking about it. I don't know if I'm allowed to. Is that ethical that I'm allowed to?
I think you should, because you might get reasonable odds, unlike Ogier and Meek, who I see are at 2-1 or something like that. And I even saw on one of the betting odds that Meek was now favourite for the championship, which for a man who's never been fighting for the championship, is quite an interesting one, I thought.
I think it's fascinating that we're actually talking about betting websites for the WRC.
But it's great, isn't it? You know, it shows there's some interest in it.
As long as you bet responsibly, we have to put that caveat, of course. As long as you bet responsibly, don't kind of put your house on, I don't know, someone like Lorenzo Birietelli on becoming WRC champion. With all due respect to him, you're possibly going to lose where you live.
So, we've not got a betting company about to sponsor the programme then?
Not yet, no. But if any are listening out there, of course, please get in contact with us. You know where to find us. @absolute_rally on Twitter and facebook.com/absoluterally. We will take your money. But what are the odds on us getting someone like that? Hey, do you see what I did there? Very, very clever. Jack, it's been a few days since Autosport. Have you heard any more news or rumours or thoughts or anything? What's going on Monte Carlo?
I think the weather's a big sticking point, isn't it? You know, we've seen pictures of bright sunshine, and we've also seen pictures of very deep snow, so I think we're up for if you believe the forecast, I think some of the weekend's going to be fairly snowy, so it should be interesting to see what the car's like in different conditions. But I think the caveat to draw from that is that don't get too excited about the the drivers and the cars over the weekend in terms of where they finish the rally, because if we do get some mixed conditions, we're going to get some potentially some odd results as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where all the cars are at. But don't judge the 2017 cars based just on this rally. I think is the thing to remember if the weather's dodgy, because you know it's going to throw up some interesting results.
Ryan Champion, you mischievously, I use that word not loosely, mischievously posted a photograph on Twitter last night. We're recording this, of course, on the Tuesday. You put a picture up last night of a wrecked car incident.
Well, I think I just quoted a tweet, so it wasn't actually my fault. But
okay.
Yes. So is that the first incident of the year? I guess it might be. In his shiny new Subaru wrecky car, one Finnish driver, Jari Matti Latvala, seemed to have a bit of an incident on the wrecky. I don't know any more than that picture. But
and what did you say? What did you say about?
I just hope he hasn't lost the feeling already.
which went down rather well across Twitter sphere, but possibly like a fart in a spacesuit within Toyota's camp. Let's just hope they haven't picked up on your Twitter feed. Anyway, Ryan Champion, we've had various pictures, as I say, put out. I put this question to Martin Holmes. I'm going to put the same question to you guys as well. I'll come to you first, Jack Bengen. You're a little bit younger than us, it's fair to say, as I was a little bit younger than Martin Holmes when I posed this question. This, to me, is without doubt the most exciting opening to a WRC season in my lifetime. Is it the same for you?
That's a bold statement. If it's in your lifetime, it must be in my lifetime, mustn't it, if you put it like that? But yeah, I think there's loads of excitement around these cars, and lots of excitement about the drivers as well. And I think that was definitely helped by VW pulling out and us getting that sort of that last minute bit of uncertainty towards the end of last year as to where everyone was going to end up. I think we're going to have the fastest rally cars we've ever had in the WRC. That, I think that's pretty much a given. So you know, the speed and the excitement and trying to work out who's going to be where at the end of the year is definitely causing a lot of excitement. There's something, seems to be something about the years ended in seven, isn't there? You know, 97 was the WRC cars, and you know, hopefully we'll get the same amount of excitement as we had then.
Right, how about you? We're of a similar age. I can't remember, you know, something being as exciting as this at the beginning of a WRC season.
No, and I think we've probably got the internet and social media to thank for that, haven't we? It is a very open championship, but we've all shared our thoughts and our comments on the internet about it. We've seen lots of footage of the brand new specification cars testing, and I guess the fact that we all chat about it online has just created our own hype to a degree, and I think that's great. And any interest in the championship is obviously a good thing. Like we've talked about previously, the World Rally Championship's not had massive exposure over the past few years. It's dropped a little bit off the mainstream radar in the UK, and let's hope that this buzz about it brings it right back there.
Absolutely. Now, Martin Holmes had a very interesting answer when I posed the same question to him. He said, when Group B came in, it was phased in over a period of time. Obviously, Group A came in, but that was almost like a backward step. There's never been a situation where every manufacturer has started the season with a brand new car like this.
Yeah, and like I said, we already know so much about the cars. We've already seen so much of the cars, albeit not in the proper livery. So yeah, it's quite right in pointing that out. You know, it's I guess the start of the World Rally Car era was a new dawning at that point, but. These cars do look spectacular. They are much faster, and we're going to see some great action throughout the year, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Now, we unfortunately, due to flights and things like that, we were meant to be having Craig Breen and Chris Meek on the podcast this week. You boys didn't even know that, did you? You see, I was working towards that, but unfortunately, it didn't quite happen. But I have to give out a massive shout out. I feel like I'm a Radio 1 DJ saying that. A massive shout out to Katie Reid from Citroën's press office, who bent over backwards to try and make it happen. It didn't quite work with time differences and stuff like that, and also with their flights being delayed. So we will be getting the boys on after the event. But you guys, Jack, have run a really nice piece where they're effectively interviewing one another in this week's MA.
Yeah, we've got a massive WRC preview, as you might expect, and it's probably, in fairness, the most important WRC preview MN's done in quite a long time, given the fact that the excitement is surrounding the championship at the minute, and everyone wanting to know a little bit of insight about the cars. And there's not many people better than David Evans for giving you that piece of insight inside the WRC. And yeah, one of the pieces we did was a little sit down with Craig and Chris, and you know, David's very good at doing that sort of thing. He's done it a few times before, and it's quite interesting where Craig and Chris are asking each other questions. David's throwing in a few questions there as well. So really nice to see their thoughts on what the championship's going to be like and what their sort of goals are for the season, because they're two very different drivers, sort of very different ambitions for the year. Craig got his first podium last year and is looking to sort of make that more consistent this year, and Chris is obviously going for the title. So really interesting to see how those two guys get on, and I think we'll see good things from Craig when he gets into a car full time in I think Portugal after that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right, can we rest assured that Chris is going to be at the forefront this season?
I think that's a safe bet. We saw it last year, particularly in Monte Carlo, right from the start, didn't we? He now has not only the confidence, he now has the knowledge to fight at the front, and I fully expect the Citroën to be a fantastic car right from the start of the first stage. You know, Citroën know Monte Carlo very well. They seem to have painstakingly developed that car. I think the Citroën will be arguably one of the best cars at the start of the year. But as Jack's already mentioned, the weather's the big question for Monte Carlo. And as we've seen in the past, you could have somebody start a stage on studded tyres, struggle on the dry section, but take a minute out of somebody else on the snow. You could have somebody on slick tyres and they're very fast on the dry tarmac, but struggle to get up the hill where they go over the col on the snow, and they'll set exactly the same time at the end of the stage. But the flip side of that is somebody can lose 2 minutes. So it'll be interesting. We saw last year, you know, we saw Andreas Mikkelsen take an alternative tyre choice to everybody else. It didn't really work out for him at that point, but there can be winners and losers that can really make the rally or ruin the rally. But I think on out and out pace, Chris Meek will be right there. And let's hope he has a bit of luck in Monte Carlo, which has never really come the way of the British drivers since the Mini days. And even then, you could argue that didn't all go to plan. So let's hope we have a British driver with a bit of luck and see him winning the Monte Carlo rally, which would be a fantastic story.
Absolutely. You've just mentioned that Andreas there, of course, and Jack, I'll bring you in at this point. When we did our final podcast last year, we still didn't know where Andreas was going to end up. We've got Andreas, unfortunately, in an R5 car. I say unfortunately because, you know, obviously he wants to be in a world car. He's not in a world car. Where do we see Andreas after Rally Monte Carlo?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? And we've already seen some news breaking in Sweden that, you know, he's not likely to be there for that event. There's some news going around I saw on Twitter and on the internet as well. So unlikely to see him in Sweden. But I did speak to someone at the Autosport show who said that Mikkelsen will be in a WRC car in Portugal, if not the event after. So hopefully, if that person's right, then we'll see him in some sort of WRC car next year. What it'll be, I'm not sure. The options are a bit limited, aren't they? You know, we're going to see the manufacturers building more and more cars, but how many are they realistically going to be able to build this year to a top standard? And you know you've got to assume that the stories we've seen in MN the past few sort of weeks and before Christmas about Mikkelsen's favourite location being DMAC, that's got to be the most likely one, hasn't it? Some sort of M Sport seat, given the fact that the other manufacturers aren't really in a position to provide a car yet.
That's exactly where I was going to go next, right? You know, it's going to be a fiesta. I think it just comes down to what the livery is, doesn't it?
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't we? You know, has he got access to any other funding? I'm sure he's working away. He'll be busy trying to raise any backing he can. But Andreas is at a point in his career where I'm sure he doesn't want to do that. Having said that, this year he needs to be in a car and he needs to keep his name in the frame. So I'm sure he'll be desperately trying to raise any backing that he can. It may well be in a DMAT car or partly, partly that team, but with other sponsors on as well, I wouldn't be surprised. So let's hope he does get something sorted. We talked about how strong he was over the course of last year. He had an incredible performance in Australia to win that rally fair and square, and we need to see him in a frontline car this year, and it would be a shame if that doesn't happen.
Jack, one of your, but we've just been talking, obviously we started the podcast at Autosport Show, and one of the big announcements that was made, albeit not to quite the fanfare that I think it deserved, was of course was Elfyn being named as the DMAC driver for the year. Now Elfyn can relax into his season. Obviously he's got Dan Barrett back alongside him and stuff like that. He's not under any threat, is he, from Andreas coming to pinch that seat, surely?
You'd be surprised if, you know, I think the thing to remember there is they've announced Elfyn after the VW sort of stuff came out. So if they did want to do a deal for Mikkelsen and Elfyn was going to be affected, then it's unlikely they would have sort of announced Elfyn and made that all public while that was still going on. So I think for that reason, you know, it looks fairly safe that Elfyn will be in that car. And also the fact that it's the third manufacturer entry for M-Sport as well. So that car scoring points for them. So, you know, I think Elfyn's safe in that situation. Whether that's the case further down the line, you know, if you'd have told us a few months ago that VW were pulling out a rally, and then we'd have been a bit surprised for this year, wouldn't we? So, you know, anything can happen, but, you know, I think Elfyn's relatively safe in that car, to be honest.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, moving forward, yes, we are sticking with M-Sport a little bit on this one. I had the joy of listening to Bex Williams' WRC Live podcast, where she was talking to Malcolm Wilson, and the excitement behind finally getting Sebastian Ogier to sign that contract. There was that lovely video that came out as well over Christmas where Malcolm was pulling the cover off the car as well, and Red Bull coming in and things like that. Right, we perhaps speculated when it was being rumoured how the budget was going to come about. We're assuming, rightly or wrongly, and we could be off on this, that, you know, there's only one Red Bull car this year, i.e. Sebastian Ogier's. Obviously drivers have got their individual backing and things like that. M-Sport are still up against it though, aren't they? You know, they're running, you know, a pretty standard livery for Tanak. Obviously the DMAC livery is a separate thing. It's not like Red Bull have come in and suddenly took over M-Sport, is it?
No, that's right. It's far from maybe the fully funded team that you know, that some of the rumours had. And you know, I'm sure it has been difficult for Malcolm Wilson to put this deal together. We know that M-Sport's business is all about selling customer cars, and Malcolm's long said that WRC is their shop window. They have to be there. They have to be competing at the top level in order to continue selling the cars. And you know, let's just hope that they can make it all work. I'm sure, having said that if the car is very competitive, which we expect it to be, with a 4-time world champion winning rallies, it will hopefully help attract some more sponsorship. And if they have a successful year, then you know, you wouldn't bet against Ogier staying, and you know, maybe a headline sponsor coming in. So whilst you're right, it certainly doesn't seem to be a fully funded team that we might like to see, I think the fact they've got Ogier, they're going to be fighting for wins again, they're going to be winning rallies again, it can only be good for the future of the team.
Well, as I say, we wish them the very best of luck. I think, obviously, we touched upon Citroën. Martin and I also spoke about Hyundai. Very settled there now, I think, boys. I don't think there's anything really to be said other than they're just going to get the heads down and perhaps, Jack, just get on with the job.
Sorry, you broke up a little bit, Tony, there. I just missed that question, sorry.
All right, I was just saying, we've kind of gone through the other teams as well. Martin and I obviously spoke about it when we did our preview to Monte Carlo, but, you know, Hyundai is pretty much, there's nothing going on there now. You know, just head down, kind of backsides up and just getting on with it. Very settled driver lineup, although there was a little bit of a few murmurs coming out of Thierry Neuville at one point, but that was settled down. And obviously Toyota now moving forward, done more test kilometres than any other team, by the way.
Yeah, Toyota, a very interesting proposition for this year, aren't they? Everything that Tommy Mäkinen is saying is that they're going to be fighting for top fives and that kind of thing, and looking at wins the year after. Whether they can come up to speed quickly, I don't know, but, you know, I think it's shocking how quickly people have been sort of made favourites and also ruled out, because we've not seen these cars in action. And, you know, Ryan was talking a bit about the social media and being able to watch the cars, and, you know, just by watching a three minute clip of a car testing, that does not tell you how quick it's going to be on a WRC event. So I think people being ruled out at this point is absolutely silly. And we saw videos of the Toyota maybe looking a little bit sort of difficult to handle and difficult to sort of look after. But, you know, that could have been fixed by now. And as you said, they've done more test mileage than anybody else. So, you know, I think there's always got to be favourites, and there's always got to be people you assume aren't going to be there, you know, right on the pace. But, you know, at this point, it's very silly, I think, to rule anyone out of running at the front.
Absolutely. Right, before we go to our any other businesses, of course, because we've only got you for a short spell. You're currently playing on snow and ice. Just tell our listeners where you are. It is that time of year. What are you up to? What are you
doing? I'm back in central Sweden, so I'm here for below zero. So we have a fleet of Tuttle Porsches on a frozen lake, it's a wide audience of people coming along to test their skills and hopefully develop them. We get a lot of racing drivers come to learn a bit of car control, or a bit more car control, I should say, to really feel a car on the limit. But we get people just coming for the ultimate driving experience and driving a 300 horsepower air cooled 911 on a frozen lake is pretty good fun, I have to say.
Right, Jack, it's a tough old world that Rye lives in. I'm sure you'll agree.
I think it's the most difficult job in the world that he's got there, and I really feel for him.
Mm. Yeah, it's a difficult time. Now, we did speak about your exploits with, of course, the legendary Jack Benyon alongside you at the Christmas stages. I've got to be honest, awkward. We said some nice things at the top. Do you want to say some nice things about Jack, or should we?
No,
leave
I do have, actually. He's
you don't
the
have
only,
to be right. You can say some horrible things if you like. It's up to you.
I'm gonna, for all the core drivers out there, Jack Benyon is the most polite car driver I've ever had, because he says please. It was stay left at the split, please. Stay right at the split, please. And I've never had a car driver that used such polite terms. So, you know, I think all credit for that.
Now, is this the warm up, boys? Now, it also has to be said. Now, did you see the fact that somebody produced the Absolute Rally Bingo? By the way, did you see that before Christmas?
I did see that. Yeah.
Now, the term X Works was in there as a word. Ryan Champion having an X Works Subaru. Now, Ryan Champion also now has an X Works Mitsubishi. In fact, the X Works Mitsubishi that you drove in the British Rally Championship.
I seem to have ended up with another X Works car. So, hoping to get out in it in a couple of weeks, actually. So, it'd be nice to be reacquainted with it. Just a car to get out and do some rallies in. The Subaru's got to the point really now where it's, you know, it's not getting any easier to get parts for it. It's it's a car that I've got to look after a little bit, whereas the Mitsubishi is one that I can use and go and do some rallies with.
Use and abuse. There you go. Will Jack Benyon be making a return to the co-driver's seat?
Who are you asking? You're asking Jack Benyon, or are you asking me?
I'll put it to you first,
well,
Ryan Champion.
It's fair to say we had an interesting day on the Christmas stages. We tried really hard, but we did get beat by I think it's fair to say some faster cars. But we did try very very hard, but Jack decided that we're going to make sure we have something that we can try and win the rally with next year. So, you know, I'm leaving that to him, and we'll see what happens next December.
No pressure. Right, Jack Benyon, do you have any other business for the first podcast back?
I've got a very quick one. I'm going to have to shoot off, but I've got a very, very quick and easy business I can do. I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's on the 21st and the 22nd, it'll be the anniversary of the deaths of Mark Fisher and Bertie Fisher. And I did go and see a very, very nice M3 at the show, at the Autosport show, the Bertie Fisher. And very sad that they're both gone. But there was a book that came out earlier this year on Bertie, and that's definitely worth a read. I just wanted to pay my respects to the family, obviously. Many of the family still competing and still involved heavily in rallying in Ireland. So, my wishes to them.
Oh, absolutely. And mine today, unfortunately, is another sad one, of course, remembering the late, great Richard Burns. We've put some stuff out on social media and stuff like that, but exactly the same sentiments. It's hard to believe he would have been 46 years old. And as I say, there you go. Rye, you're any other business for this week?
And just echoing both those there. Obviously, we lost sad loss for rallying with losing Richard and both Mark and Bertie Fisher. Mark was a good friend of mine, but it's important that we remember them. I guess moving away from that slightly, my any other business this week is recce cars. So we always talk about recce cars, these mysterious plain coloured vehicles that that cross the world and basically get used and abused at every WRC round. And we were expecting M Sport to pension off the fleet of Volvos that they've had for nigh on 15 years, but not a bit of it. We've got Ott Tanak and Elvin Evans using them in Monte Carlo, but Sebastian Ogier is debuting the new Focus RS recce car for M Sport. And we've got obviously brand new cars from brand new recce cars for the Toyota team. They're actually using Subarus. Obviously, Tommy Mäkinen had close links with Subaru before the Toyota program. And also debuting Subarus are the Citroën World Rally team. Until now, Citroën have been using Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution 9s. They've finally pensioned off those cars that they've had for just over 10 years, and they've built some new Subarus. So that's the recce car watch.
No, do you know what? Right, I was going to do something because I know how long, obviously, M Sport have had those Volvos for, and I got it wrong because I thought they were gone at the end of Australia. Because I remember speaking to John Millington probably about this time last year, who of course he's now kind of semi-retired, it's fair to say, until he's stepped into the breach there at M Sport. And I was speaking to John about it, and I was saying what's going to happen to the Volvos after Rally Australia. And there was one option, just to push them into the ocean, apparently, because they just wanted to shutter them. But as you say, they have been brought out of retirement for one last event. But yeah, I seen that image of Mr. Ogier in a brand new Focus RS, and I assume the other boys will get them. Or I've just got this funny feeling, by the way, the Volvos will still remain and they'll just be rented out.
Well, I don't think it'll be the end of them, because whilst the works drivers may well see the Focus RSs, I'm sure that the satellite M Sport drivers will still be using the Volvos for a while to come.
So there you go. Anyway, we've lost Jack Benning. Jack's shot off to go and do things that he's got to do. Ryan Champion is going to go and warm up after playing on frozen lakes. And we've got one last section in this particular podcast. And again, thanks for the downloads. You know, we live at @absolute_rally on Twitter and facebook.com/absoluterally. And we're going to come back in the final section with Crazy Leo, who's got some news to announce. It's always exciting when Leo does that. So we're tuning for the last section anyway with Crazy Leo, from over all the way in Canada.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back a former guest of ours. We've not had him on for a little while, but he's still very active on Twitter. He hasn't been as active as probably he wanted to be in a rally car of late, but all that's about to change. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Crazy Leo.
Hello, Absolute Rally. Hello, Tony. It's awesome to be back. And first of all, I want to say that you guys are doing amazing job with your podcast. That's about the only thing that motivates me to stay on that treadmill for 40 minutes.
Well, if you're only staying on for 40 minutes, that must mean you must be listening to us when you're getting a shower as well, because we're normally on for an hour, but we'll let that one go. Leo, listen, I wanted to get you on before Christmas because you did something really, really unique. And I know you've got something you want to tell us about, but I want to come to this bit first. Right, you kind of did, we've got a show over here, and I think it's over in the States as well, kind of like, and Canada and various parts of the world now, kind of like X Factor, where people are chosen and they send them, you know, video themselves in and stuff like that. And you chose to go down this particular route to choose your new co-driver. How did that idea come about?
Well, I've been quite unlucky with the fact that I had to replace a number of co-drivers over the years. So the very least I could do is try to get as much PR out of it as possible. So anytime I need a new co-driver, I make a little video and do ask people to help me spread the word. And normally people do help. But aside from PR, it's also just to spread the word, really, because unfortunately, I wasn't able to rally in the last 2 years. So since I've last been on the market, let's say, some guys who were very maybe talented but not quite experienced enough 2 years ago, now they're experienced. So just to spread the word, to let people in the UK, and we're talking to some Portuguese, some French guys as well, to let them know that I'm searching, hunting. And yeah, that's kind of why. And these days, everybody prefers a video rather than a text, so might as well do a video.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what was the criteria, Leo? You, I'm assuming you got a lot of videos sent to you, as you say, from pretty much all over the world. How did you go about, what was the choosing process, how did that work?
Well, first of all, pace notes are the most important thing in rallying by far. So even though budget and things like availability and non-conflict with their events versus my events were the factors, most important is their delivery in the car. So the mandatory thing was to send a minimum of 3 on boards with a quick driver in a good car. And really, it's from there on, if I liked the delivery, you know, timing, all the important bits, then we went into discussion of everything else. But really, first and foremost, it's how they deliver the notes.
Okay, well, it's no secret now. Alex Karani, who is an American co-driver who I know quite well, he's been competing over here in the UK. He's been living over in the UK, but of course, very experienced on the American Rally Championship. And that's the man who you've chosen to be in the silly seat alongside you.
Correct. That's a brave man who agreed, let's say, yes.
Well, Alex, as I say, is a friend of the show. He has been on the show as well several times, actually. So it's great that we've got Alex, who's going to be sat alongside you. Now, I suppose the big news or what we want to know is, what are you and Alex going to be doing?
Yes, I really like so much the job that you guys are doing that I kept this announcement, which is nothing big for the world of rallying, but for us here in Canada and the US, it's kind of big news. I kept this for you, so nobody knows about this yet, and you're going to be the first to publish this.
Fantastic.
As you know, I own an open class rally car, and open class rally car in North America can be quite expensive to run and can be very fast machines. Some of them could, if you have the budget, be faster than world rally cars, at least of 2016 generation, and M Sport and Ken Block proved that. Now, my team also owns a crazy Subaru that is actually kind of similar spec to VW Polo. So theoretically, I could rent that car from the team one day. But after I've been in Europe and after I've seen and I loved the competition in the Drive D-Mac Fiesta Trophy, when it's actually smaller cars but better competition and more rallies in the same car, I actually decided together with the team to go in production class. So that's the big news. Even though we have the access to the open class cars, because of a few reasons, one of them I can't afford to do as much rallies as I'd like in an open class car, we decided to build a brand new, it hasn't been even finished yet, it's a brand new production class car, and I really want to push this year an idea to people, especially in North America, that, hey guys, stop wasting money on $10,000 turbo and, you know, $12,000 brakes. Just get a more simple car and actually get the seat time.
Fantastic. So I assume this is Can-Am that are going to be building. So it is going to be a Subaru, I'm guessing.
Correct. Yes, it is a Subaru. And actually, we went for a 2007 chassis because they're a bit smaller than 2016. And certain things are a little bit better because obviously we have to stay quite tight within the rules being production car. So it's a brand new build, but it is an older chassis.
So that'll be an N12, would it? That would be. Are you talking about
Correct.
The N12? Yeah, the N12. So the boot as opposed to the hatchback.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a sedan, right? Sedan N12.
I don't understand the sedan stuff, Leo. I've got to be honest. It's always throwing me the whole sedan. It's a saloon. It's
saloon. Saloon. There you go. There you go. Yeah, I heard those words from Freddie Mercury. Saloon.
Right. Well, taking that into account, you're going to be doing more rallies. Now, what are the rallies you're going to be doing?
Well, the goal is to try to fight for the production class championship in Canada, production four-wheel drive. So, but my big aspiration is still WRC. Like, I'm doing Reiki for Rally Mexico this year. So far, I can only afford Reiki. We're working, trying to put together maybe something as even small as R1 or R2 car during the last few weeks. But I want to try to clinch that championship doing as little rallies as possible. In Canada, there's 7 national rallies. But 3 of them are out west, which is as far as from London to Moscow, like crazy traveling. So I'm trying to get that goal without having to go to all the events. So For now, that's the plan so far.
Okay. Will you be taking anything in this new American Championship, of course, which is launching very, very shortly with a round in Canada, ironically?
Yes, it is. We have registered for that because you never know what opportunities can come along. But there's one rally that's purely American rally that has shifted to this new ARA series that I really like to do. It's called STPR. It's actually, in my opinion, second or third best rally in North America, and it is really challenging. A lot of people are not going to like me for this, but too many rallies in the States are too straight. I always thought that, but now that I've gone to Europe, it's after seeing European roads, these are really too straight. And when people say they're fast and big balls, yeah, but it's just not technical enough. So I don't want to waste the money necessarily doing that unless I have a big partner who's paying. So far, while it's my Canadian team fitting the bill, I'd rather stay with more technical events in Canada, except that one STPR in the States.
Okay, so the car's still being built. When do we start testing?
Well, we are supposed to start testing in like a week from today, but we'll see. It's I've been so rusty that I have all the excuses in the book to kind of take it easy at the start, and also the big thing that I'm trying to kind of do is get back into the saddle of making pace notes, because it's been a while, right? So that I've started already. And this car shouldn't be too hard to handle. It's a production car. I know Subarus quite well, so testing wouldn't be crucial, but trying to get the pace notes are back to speed, that's important.
Have you and Alex been together yet? Have you and Alex been in a car together yet?
No, because of budget limitations, he'll only come some days before the rally. So I have, with my driving school, I do teach some co-drivers as well, and I've taken the most talented one, and I've been torturing him for the last couple of weeks to call me down.
So the deal's in place, the car's in place, I assume tire partners and everything, that's all sorted out for you as well now?
Yeah, it's new for me too. They allowed finally studs in North American rallying, in at least this event. It's not WRC studs, but it's not street studs. It's like kind of slightly bigger than the street stud that you would expect to see in a dealership, like in a tire shop in Finland. So it's actually supposed to be about 20-30% better grip than what we used to run on ice, which was tractionized rubber.
So wow.
It's quite exciting. New stuff.
Well, listen, I know you're a rally fan as well. So we're talking about snow and ice, and we're talking about studded tyres. As we record this, shakedown has just been going on for Rally Monte Carlo. Are you watching, Leo? Are you getting excited as much as other rally fans are for the 2017 cars?
Oh, I can't stay off it. That's the problem. I cannot wait for this season to get going. I'm so excited that Seb is with M-Sport. It's just brilliant. I've been obviously following. It's funny. I've been hearing your podcasts after the decisions were made with a bit of a delay, and you guys were bang on guessing a lot of those things, eh? And it's so good. Okay, yes, it does suck that VW pulled out, of course. But it's so great that Seb ended up with M Sport, and now it's I just can't wait. I can't wait. Remember when Sebastian Loeb returned and that one first stage in Monte, he put, 20 seconds on everybody?
Yep. I was there. So, I was there on that stage. I was over on Monte Carlo that year.
Did you throw some snow for other people on the road, or maybe that was the reason?
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. Okay. It wasn't me. Allegedly.
Yeah. No, look, it gives that wild card factor, doesn't it, now? And other guys are, of course, talented. I'm personally rooting for Chris Meek for this year, but of course, if Seb was in a more dominant car with the most testing like Polo was or would have been, it would be a bit less interesting than now, right? We just can't guess anything. What are your prognosis? Like, who's going to win Monte?
Well, you know what? Out of everybody that's been on the podcast so far, nobody's asked me. I've asked everybody else. You're the first person to ask me.
Okay.
Now, maybe I've got the foresight of, obviously, shakedown is happening as we record this. And obviously, Seb has just gone fastest. Andreas Mikkelsen was second fastest in the R5 car, which is a surprise to a few people. What has been quite interesting, Leo, is on Twitter. I love Twitter, and I'm seeing what people are saying. People who know, people who drivers especially, people like David Higgins and Guy Wilkes and people like that, have been having this debate about whether this Monte Carlo and the conditions that we're now seeing might suit an R5 car over the more powerful 2017 World Rally car. And I thought that's interesting. And then I seen Andreas's time coming. Now, I'm not going to say an R5 is going to win it. What I'm saying is that it's not actually, maybe it's going to be a rally that's not going to be down to power and everything else. But I just think when it comes down to managing situations, this is sounds like a cop-out, but Sebastian Ogier can manage a car. Everything he went through with regards to running order last year and everything else, he still managed this situation. And I believe that the fact that he is in a new car, he will manage that situation better than probably some of the others. I really want Chris to do well. I'm a big fan of Chris Meek. Chris is a friend of the show and everything else. And I don't think Chris is going to be far behind. I think it's going to be between Seb and Chris Meek.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. And wouldn't it be very wise for Chris to kind of maybe just think about the points, unless he's in a big lead right from the get-go? Because if he just finishes second here, it's all open. If he tries too hard and goes off, then it's obviously a lot worse for the rest of the year, isn't it?
I think everybody, because we're all starting, or rather they're all starting with a clean sheet of paper and new cars and everything else, no one really knows. This is what we keep coming back to. No one really knows. Even the shakedown times, obviously I've just made reference to them, but ultimately the shakedown times are... nobody, as you know, Leo, is going to go silly on shakedown. They're trying to find a reasonable setup, which is perhaps one step on from the testing they've been doing last week. That's what shakedown's for. You're never going to go, you know, completely for it on shakedown. But I just think this, it's so difficult. And we've spoke about this all the way through the podcast. It is so, so difficult to actually say anybody, because every team and every driver has got a strong argument. You could look at Hyundai, and we've said this earlier on the podcast, that, you know, that's a very settled team this year. You know, there's no changing round. They've been testing for quite some time and everything else. Toyota have put in more test kilometers than any other team. In fact, in some cases, two of them put together, Toyota have put more test kilometers in. Juha Hänninen, you know, again, we can be quite dismissive and automatically go straight to Jari Matti, but Juha Hänninen is a firm hand, and he was very, very strong on Monte Carlo back in the IRC days when he was driving for Skoda Motorsport. And then we come to Citroën. We talk about Sebastian Leboeuf and also Chris Meek as well. Again, you know, very, very talented boys. Then you look at, we come back to Sebastian Ogier, and we look at obviously his teammate Oid Tanak. You know, there's very firm shouts in every team for them to be on the podium, very easily be on the podium, by the way. I don't think it's going to be a lockout by any team, and I think that's what's the most exciting thing.
Oh, 100%. And it's just so cool that you can't predict what's going to happen, isn't it?
It is. And that's what, you know, I must have, I watched some footage last night, and I watched a preview program on the excellent WRC Plus Pro app last night. And it really got me in the mood. In fact, I was in Monte Carlo this time 2 years ago, and I went there as a fan, although I did end up doing a little bit of work out there. And I texted my other half last night saying, I wish we were in Gap. I wish we were in Gap right now. I want to be there now. And normally I don't get that, because I've been to a lot of WRC rounds. But I must admit, this one, gee, I don't think there's been, and I've said this to everybody on the podcast so far, I don't think there's been a season that started in my lifetime that has been as exciting as this.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Now, look, I was supposed to be there, and then I had a rally come through, like a sponsor wanted me to do a rally in Canada, like next weekend. So I canceled Monte Carlo. I was going to go to do Recce only option, and obviously spectate and all that. And I had to cancel it. But then the sponsor pulled out because of internal politics. So I'm really disappointed I'm not there. But yeah, yeah.
Well, Leo, what I'm going to need you to do, and I know you'll love to do this. Are you going to come back? Are you going to be our man this year? I want Leo's opinions on stuff, not only from what he's doing, but what's going on in the world of rallying. Are you going to come back and be a regular guest for us?
Oh, with pleasure. And if I can support you guys in any way other than, you know, like already kind of spreading the love on social media, by all means, you guys are doing honestly a great, great job. And, you know, one question back to the R5 car. Could it be, I know from experience, because we rallied without studs for so long here in Canada, could it be that less powerful car is always easier to drive on like very low grip surfaces, but also it's a narrower chassis, could, on a very narrow road, it could be of an advantage.
I think there's definitely, you know, it's a shame we haven't got Ryan Champion at this point. He's the man who can talk your way around centre diffs and stuff like that as well. I think the other thing is with regards to the active centre diff on the modern day 2017 mm-hmm. car as well. That's obviously going to come into play as well. And, you know, that mm-hmm. while it can make it more drivable, is it better to have something more fixed? Again, that's definitely Ryan Champion's area. That's why he does the podcast with me, because he knows this stuff far better than me. But no,
he's a lucky boy with all those drives in the world, the Mitsubishi and all that. Yeah,
he is. Well, he's just bought his ex works car. He's got two ex works cars now, and one of them was the Mitsubishi that he drove in the British Rally Championship. So he's a very happy boy. He's got blue and red now in the garage. He's got blue and red in the garage. But I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think there's going to be some outstanding performances in R5. And, you know, Andreas, okay, I said before it was fantastic, but I also then played down the shakedown times. I think someone like Andreas in an R5 car, again, the amount of kilometres that lad's done in a car over the years is phenomenal. He's drove World Rally cars from the age of 15. I think you could see certainly some very, very impressive stage times. Whether he's going to be in a position over the course of the event to actually to upset more of the modern cars, or when I say more modern cars rather than the 2017 cars, I really, really don't know. But I would not be surprised to see some outstanding stage times throughout the event from him.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It is just so exciting. Great.
Absolutely. Now, Leo, thank you for breaking that news. We are now at the end of our podcast, but you are going to be our man. We're going to have you back on a regular basis, along with, we have to say a big shout out, by the way, to our new partners for this coming season, Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Thank you guys for coming on board. And obviously, it allows us to have people like Leo on as well. Leo, next time you come on, we're going to give you any other business as well. You're going to do your own any other business next time you come on, okay?
Great. Thank you very much. Like I said, it's a pleasure, and let's just have an awesome weekend following Monty.
Can't wait. Folks, thank you so, so much for the download. Thank you for spreading the love. You know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter and Facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. We will be back next week, and we've got another 9 episodes. And next week is going to be the week after Monte Carlo.